Romance of the Three Kingdoms, Chapter 81.
Liu Bei, just completely consumed by grief. The news about Guan Yu killed by Sun Quan's forces, it isn't just politics for him. Yeah. No, it hits him like this deep personal betrayal.
Absolutely visceral.
The text says his desire for revenge was so absolute, he actually declared he wanted to devour their flesh and exterminate their clan.
Wow.
You can almost feel that burning rage, can't you?
Yeah.
The depth of his sorrow just fueling this one single-minded demand for payback.
And what's so striking is how immediately that raw emotion clashes with, you know, pure strategic thinking. Almost instantly, Zhao Yun, one of his most trusted generals, steps up. And his perspective is remarkably clear-headed, isn't it?
Totally.
Zhao Yun argues, look, the real national villain isn't Sun Quan, it's Cao Cao. He's the one who usurped the Han throne.
Right, the bigger picture.
Exactly. He urges Liu Bei, prioritize the main cause, attack Wei, secure the north. Then he figures Wu will naturally submit later. He makes this really critical, almost clinical distinction. Guan Yu's death, that's a private grudge, but Cao Cao. Yeah. He represents the public grudge against the Han dynasty itself.
A powerful argument.
He really believed Liu Bei needed to put the empire first, not personal vengeance.
But Liu Bei's emotions were just way too strong. He couldn't entertain it. He immediately, defiantly, just rejects Zhao Yun's advice, basically saying, what good is an empire if I don't avenge my brother? And that moment, it just perfectly defines the conflict we're looking at, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That monumental struggle between personal loyalty and, well, cold, hard political pragmatism.
Yeah.
And this is where the story really takes a sharp turn. It shows how personal vengeance can just snowball into this unstoppable force.
It really does.
But Liu Bei wasn't the only one overcome with rage. As the news spread, it hit another raw nerve in Langzong. That's where Zhang Fei, Liu Bei's other sworn brother, was stationed. And his grief was just profound.
Oh, absolutely.
The sources describe him crying day and night. So much so that, get this, blood soaked his clothes.
It's such a vivid, almost horrifying image.
Could you even imagine this fierce warrior, known for his booming voice and temper, just utterly broken, weeping openly for his lost brother?
And, you know, this raises a really important question about how intense grief, especially for someone powerful like Zhang Fei, without a healthy outlet, how it can turn toxic. Because Zhang Fei's grief, it manifested in a really dangerous way. Violent outbursts. He'd get drunk often and then start whipping and even killing his own subordinates, sometimes for tiny mistakes.
That's terrifying.
It's not just a character flaw, though. You could almost see it as, well, maybe like secondary trauma. Extreme grief turning into destructive rage, especially when there's no accountability. He turned his inward pain outwards, and the consequences were devastating for those around him.
And right in the middle of this brewing storm, Liu Bei summons Zhang Fei. He's still dead set on his eastern campaign, and he needs his brother. He promotes him, gives him the prestigious rank of chariot and cavalry general. Huge military authority, right? Puts him right near the top. Plus other titles, too.
Yeah, big honors. And Zhang Fei's reaction when he gets the decree, it just perfectly captures his fiery spirit, his unwavering commitment to that Peach Garden Oath.
That sacred pact.
Exactly. That blood-sworn brotherhood between the three of them. He was furious at any talk of delaying revenge, apparently shouts something like, what kind of talk is that?
Yeah.
He was absolutely ready for immediate action. Volunteers right away to be the vanguard, lead the charge against Wu, no hesitation.
Their reunion in Chengdu, it's incredibly moving, really shows their bond. Zhang Fei, this huge, formidable warrior, just throws himself at Liu Bei's feet, weeping uncontrollably.
Yeah.
And Liu Bei, just as overcome, weeps right back.
It's raw, yeah. A powerful scene of shared brotherhood, shared grief driving them both. But even in that moment, that intense shared sorrow, we get this critical bit of foreshadowing, a really direct, almost prescient warning from Liu Bei to Zhang Fei.
Oh, right. I remember this part.
Liu Bei tells him, and I'm paraphrasing slightly, look, I've always known you get violent after drinking. You whip strong men, then you keep them near you. That's asking for disaster.
Well, he actually said that, even then.
He did. And if you connect that to the bigger picture, it's not just a casual remark. It's Liu Bei, his own heart totally consumed by revenge, but still clear-headed enough to see this fatal flaw in his brother, a flaw that, tragically, is going to come back to haunt them both, directly impacting the very campaign they're about to launch.
So with Zhang Fei now equally, maybe even fanatically committed to vengeance, the pressure on Liu Bei just intensified. The officials and Zhuge Liang himself, they make this big concerted effort to talk him out of it.
Yeah, Zhuge Liang, ever the strategist, he'd already tried multiple times apparently, but now he leads the whole court in a fresh appeal to their emperor.
What was his angle this time?
His counsel was, again, calm, rational, utterly strategic. He basically said, okay, if the goal is fighting the Han's traitor, meaning Cao Cao for great righteousness, fine. Then it makes sense for you, the emperor, to lead personally. But if it's only about fighting Wu for personal revenge, a skilled general can handle that. There's no need for the emperor himself to risk everything and divert the whole nation's focus.
Makes sense.
It was a clear, logical alternative. It gave Liu Bei a way to maybe honor his grief without completely jeopardizing the mission of their new empire.
And the sources say, for a second maybe, Liu Bei hesitated. Wavered just a bit.
It seems so, yeah, just for a fleeting moment. But that hesitation, it was completely steamrolled by Zhang Fei's passionate plea.
Zhang Fei again.
Zhang Fei jumps in, basically threatens to go alone if Liu Bei doesn't join him. And that emotional appeal, it just cements Liu Bei's resolve for revenge, pushes aside any strategic doubts he might have had.
So the logic didn't stand a chance against that bond.
Not in that moment. And it's right here that we meet this incredibly courageous scholar, Qin Mi.
Right, Qin Mi. He speaks up despite the emperor's mood.
Exactly. Yeah. Despite Liu Bei's obvious fury, Qin Mi stands firm, delivers what the text calls his golden words of warning. He argues Liu Bei is abandoning the empire for small righteousness, meaning personal vengeance, and that's a path the wise rulers of the past would never endorse.
Gutsy move. How did Liu Bei take that?
Badly. Enraged, Liu Bei orders his execution on the spot. But Qin Mi faces death with this incredible stoicism, calmly lamenting the potential overthrow of the newly established enterprise.
Wow.
What's really fascinating, you know, is this profound, selfless advice from a true patriot, just completely ignored in the face of Liu Bei's consuming fury. It's a chilling moment, a leader totally closing himself off to dissent, even when that dissent could save the state.
And as if that wasn't enough, Zhuge Liang makes one last attempt, a final, powerful memorial to Liu Bei.
He tries again.
He acknowledges the grief, right? The loss of Jing province, the loss of Guan Yu, he gets it. But he strategically argues, again, Cao Cao is the real usurper, not Sun Quan. Sun Quan, despite everything, is still fighting for his own legitimate claim, in a way.
A subtle distinction, but important. Yeah.
He repeats the call. Defeat Wei first, then Wu will submit. And he begs Liu Bei, for the sake of the Han Dynasty, please listen to Qin Mi's wise advice.
But Liu Bei's reaction, absolute rejection, definitive. He apparently threw the memorial to the ground.
Just threw it down.
Yep, and declared, my mind is made up, no more counsel.
Wow. End of discussion.
Pretty much. And this really raises a crucial question for any leader, doesn't it? Past or present. What are the real dangers when a leader shuts themselves off entirely to dissenting opinions, even from their most trusted, wisest advisors?
Yeah.
It's that classic trap where conviction, when it's completely unchecked, just becomes blinding.
So despite all those warnings, all the desperate pleas, Liu Bei pushes ahead, the fateful plan goes into motion, and the scale of his mobilization for this Eastern campaign was just immense. Sources say he gathered a colossal force, 750,000 troops. Can you imagine?
It's staggering.
Including hundreds of Shu generals and even 50,000 allies, these five streams barbarian forces, local tribes from the mountains who pledged loyalty. He makes key appointments too.
Mm-hmm.
The veteran Huang Zong as vanguard, the super reliable Zhao Yun handling logistics, vital stuff.
Mm.
And guys like Ma Chao and Wei Yan are left to defend the strategic Hanzhong region against Wei. Can't forget about them.
Good point. Protect the rear.
The departure date is set July 221 AD. The invasion is on.
Meanwhile, while Liu Bei is gathering this massive army, we cut back to Zhang Fei in Lengzong, making his own preparations, and his grief and fury still absolutely raging, shaping every command.
Right, this is where the armor comes in.
Exactly. He makes this incredibly demanding, symbolic order. He tells his entire army they need to prepare white banners and white armor, head to toe.
White for mourning.
Right. A powerful visual statement of mourning for Guan Yu and vengeance. But here's the kicker. He demands it all be ready within just 3 days.
3 days? For an entire army? That sounds impossible.
It was impossible. It was a deadline driven purely by raw emotion, not any kind of logistical reality.
And it's this demand, this emotionally charged order, that leads directly to that pivotal, tragic interaction.
Okay. Two of his subordinate officers, Fan Zhang and Zeng Da, they go to him. They plead for more time. They try to explain, look, it's absolutely impossible to produce this specific huge order for the whole army in just 3 days.
How does Zhang Fei react, given his state?
Predictably badly. Explosively. He yells something like, how dare you defy my order? He has them tied to a tree, brutally punished, 50 lashes each. And then he delivers this chilling, explicit death threat. If that deadline is missed, he says, he will kill them both as a public example.
He threatened to kill his own officers.
He did. And if we connect this back, this moment is the direct, tragic fulfillment of Liu Bei's earlier warning, remember?
About his violence after drinking, whipping men.
Exactly. His violent temper, mistreating subordinates, Liu Bei saw it coming. The seeds of disaster, sown by Zhang Fei's own rage and grief, had finally, tragically, begun to sprout.
So, as these impossible 3 days are ticking down, something strange happens to Zhang Fei himself. A kind of chill creeps over him.
Yeah, the narrative tells us he felt his heart startled, flesh trembling. He couldn't sit still, couldn't rest. A premonition.
And how did he interpret it?
He attributed it to just missing Guan Yu intensely, his longing for his brother.
Wow. So even his own body is warning him, but he misreads it as grief.
It's a moment heavy with psychological weight, isn't it? A warrior sensing his own doom, but cloaking it in the very grief that's driving him towards it.
The dramatic irony there is just palpable.
It really is. And unable to cope, maybe seeking escape, what does he do? He resorts to drinking heavily with his subordinates. It was apparently his custom.
Drinking again, just like Liu Bei warned.
Exactly. He falls into this deep, deep drunkenness. And this act, maybe meant to numb his pain, just seals his fate. It creates the perfect, unguarded opportunity for those aggrieved officers, Fan Jiang and Zeng Da.
Okay, so the assassins make their move.
They do. Fan Jiang and Zeng Da, armed with short knives, creep into Zhang Fei's tent, dead of night.
And there's that detail about his eyes.
Crucial detail. The text notes Zhang Fei usually slept with his eyes open, like a warrior's vigilance, always alert. But that night, they could hear his breathing, apparently like thunder, confirming he was out cold. They approach.
And then Duran.
Swift, brutal. There's a great cry from Zhang Fei, and he's struck down, dead at 55.
Just like that, his own men.
His own men. The poem in the text laments his death, you know, before he could even get his revenge on Wu, leaving only sorrow behind in Langzong. It's such a profound loss.
Not just for Liu Bei personally, but for the whole Shu Han state. Losing Guan Yu, now Zhang Fei, their two greatest warriors, gone in quick succession. All because of this one emotional campaign.
Devastating.
So immediately after the murder, Fan Jiang and Zeng Da, they sever Zhang Fei's head.
Yes. And they flee under cover of darkness, heading straight for Eastern Wu, delivering the head as proof of their deed, a token of their betrayal.
And the news eventually reaches Liu Bei, I can't even imagine. Doubling his loss, confirming everything his advisors warned him about.
Utterly devastating, you have to assume. And this tragic end brings us right back full circle to all that unheeded counsel that started this whole chain reaction.
Right.
When Zhu Liang hears about Zhang Fei's death, his lament is so poignant. He says, if Fa Shaozi were still alive, he surely would have been able to stop our lord from this eastern campaign.
Oh, I was saying.
Fa Zheng was known for sometimes being able to sway Liu Bei when others couldn't.
Another key advisor who had died earlier.
Exactly.
Liu Bei having this really rough night. Just profound unrest. The text says his heart pounding and flesh trembling. He just can't sleep. So he steps outside, looks up at the sky, and sees this really ominous sign. A star described as large as a dipper, suddenly falling in the northwest.
Oh.
It feels like a cosmic warning, doesn't it?
It really does. And you have to remember that connection back then between celestial events and, you know, earthly misfortune that was absolutely crucial for understanding the era. People took these omens incredibly seriously.
Yeah.
They were believed to signal major shifts, often tragedies. So it sets this incredibly somber tone right from the start. It's like a cosmic prelude to what happens next.
And that confirmation, it comes so fast, it's almost shocking. Liu Bei is so troubled, he sends for Zhu Liang, who basically confirms his fears, predicting the loss of a great general within, what, 3 days?
3 days, yeah.
And then almost immediately, a messenger arrives. From Wu Ban, Zhang Fei's general.
Yep.
And the news is just devastating. Zhang Fei has been murdered by his own subordinates, Fan Jiang and Zhang Da. And they fled to Wu, taking his head with them. It's just immediate, terrible fulfillment of that omen.
And this assassination, I mean, one of his sworn brothers, Guan Yu already gone, now Zhang Fei. It just shatters the very foundation of Liu Bei's closest relationships, doesn't it?
Completely.
You see his reaction in the text. He stomped his foot. He cries aloud. He actually fainted to the ground. The grief is just overwhelming.
Yeah, refusing food.
Refusing food, yeah. It makes it so clear this isn't just strategic loss, you know, losing a general. It's the loss of family. It really underscores that deep bond they forged way back in the Peach Garden Oath, now broken twice.
That raw emotion, that line, if my two brothers are both gone, how can I bear to live alone?
Yeah.
That's what makes Liu Bei so compelling here, I think. But maybe flawed, too.
Well, yeah.
He's over 60, right? And he's not just thinking about strategic revenge. It seems like he's questioning the very meaning of his life without Guan Yu and Zhang Fei. It feels like this intensely personal crisis playing out on this huge imperial stage.
And it powerfully illustrates that ancient dilemma for leaders, doesn't it? How personal grief can just cloud strategic judgment. It could potentially lead an entire empire down a path dictated purely by emotion rather than cool reason.
Right.
His officials are, you know, they're urging him, preserve your dragon body. Basically, take care of yourself. You're the emperor. They're reminding him of his age, his responsibilities.
But he's not having it.
No. His emotional drive for vengeance is clearly just overriding everything else. It creates this classic tension, you know, personal desire versus imperial responsibility.
And that sense of personal loss, you can almost feel it coming off the page.
Right.
But then it sparks something different maybe in the next generation.
The
scene gets even more poignant, I think, when Zhang Bao arrives, Zhang Fei's son. He's in white robes and silver armor, confirming his father's murder, the killers escaping to Wu.
A very visual representation of mourning and readiness for vengeance.
And then right after, Guan Jing shows up, Guan Yu's son, same attire. And this just triggers a whole fresh wave of grief for Liu Bei, doesn't it? Remembering Guan Yu. He cries out, seeing these two nephews, how can my heart not be broken?
Such a powerful moment. Seeing the sons really brings the loss of the fathers into sharp focus again.
So this deep personal sorrow, it leads to this really interesting advisory session. Liu Bei is so consumed by grief, his officials are getting worried.
Understandably.
They think it's going to negatively impact the impending military campaign. So Ma Liang and Chen Zhen, they suggest something pretty unusual.
Yeah.
Seek out Li Yi.
Yeah.
He's this legendary recluse from Qingcheng Mountain, rumored to be 300 years old, supposedly knows life, death, and fortune.
Right, the mysterious sage figure. It's such a common and, frankly, compelling trope in these kinds of historical narratives.
Why do you think that is?
Well, they often represent this kind of ancient wisdom, maybe a deeper understanding of the cosmic order than even emperors possess. It tells us that even the most powerful leaders, when they're facing immense uncertainty, they still sought out that supernatural insight. It's like recognizing the limits of human strategy alone.
That makes sense. So Chen Zhen makes the journey, goes into this deep valley, and this child just appears, greets him by name.
Which is spooky in itself.
Totally. And reveals Li Yi had already predicted his arrival and knew why he was coming.
See? That just cements Li's reputation right there as this divine immortal. Even before Chen Zhen meets him, it really builds the anticipation.
And when Li Yi finally agrees to meet, the description is just,
well,
otherworldly. Mm-hmm. Radium hair, childlike complexion, green eyes, square pupils, glowing brightly. Body like an ancient cypress.
Yeah, definitely not your average mountain hermit. He's presented as this figure of immense wisdom, maybe connected to something far beyond the mundane world. Sets the stage perfectly for some kind of profound revelation.
So Liu Bei, you know, desperate for guidance, he asks him straight up, what's the outcome going to be for this revenge campaign against Wu?
Mm-hmm.
And Li Yi's first response is kind of humble, but also maybe a bit ominous. This is heaven's will, not something an old man like me can know.
A classic sage deflection, perhaps.
Maybe. But Liu Bei presses him, and then he gives this visual prophecy.
Ah, the drawings, yes. He draws, what was it, over 40 pictures of military equipment and horses.
Yeah, logum.
And then just tears them all up. Gone. Poof.
And after that?
After that, he draws something else. A large person lying on the ground, another digging earth to bury them. Pretty grim imagery.
Definitely grim.
And then he places a large character, the character Bei, meaning white, above this burial scene. And then he just bows and leaves. Doesn't say another word.
Wow. Just leaves him with that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Incredibly symbolic. Almost like a riddle Liu Bei has to solve.
It really is a riddle.
Ah.
So the torn equipment, that seems pretty straightforward, right? Defeat, Destruction of his forces?
Seems likely, yeah. Or at least significant losses. The burial imagery, well, that points pretty directly to death.
Okay, but the character, White, what do you make of that? That seems key.
That's where it gets really rich, I think. Yu obviously means white, which is the color of mourning in Chinese culture. So that strongly suggests death, sorrow, grief, reinforces the burial image.
Okay, mourning. Makes sense.
It could hint at a significant loss for the kingdom itself, not just the army.
So it's deliberately ambiguous.
I think so. It's not meant to be a simple yes or no answer. It's designed to provoke thought, maybe force Liu Bei to confront potential unwelcome truths about his whole endeavor.
But Liu Bei, he just completely dismisses it, doesn't he? Calls it mad old man's ravings, burns the drawings.
Yep, burns the evidence, you could say.
And immediately orders his army to advance. So what's the implication there? Just flat out ignoring what was seen as divine counsel.
Well, it's more than just ignoring a warning, isn't it? It's a really powerful illustration of that human tendency, maybe leader tendency, to reject inconvenient truths when you're consumed by a powerful emotion.
Like his grief and vengeance drive.
Exactly. He's so focused on revenge, he just can't entertain any suggestion that his campaign might fail. Anything that goes against that is just dismissed as madness. And that kind of willful blindness, you know, driven by emotion over reason, often has huge consequences in leadership, historically speaking.
So the emperor's resolve is, if anything, hardened by this. The call to arms goes out immediately. And we see Zhang Bao step up first.
Zhang Feisan.
Yeah, full of that youthful energy, volunteers to lead the vanguard, wants to avenge his father.
Makes sense.
But then Guan Jing, Guan Yu's son, steps forward too and challenges him straight up. Leave the seal for me.
Ooh, instant conflict.
Yeah. It's an immediate clash of these two legacies, isn't it? Both young guys, eager to prove themselves, eager for vengeance.
And that dynamic between them, it's really compelling. They're both driven by wanting to avenge their fathers, of course. But there's also that intense psychological pressure of living up to these legendary figures.
Huge shoes to fill.
Massive shoes. And that pressure mixed with their own personal grief, it just fuels their ambition and maybe their rivalry too.
So Liu Bei decides to settle this dispute with a contest, an archery contest.
A classic way to test martial skill.
Zhang Bao goes first, sets up a target 100 paces away, red heart in the middle, hits it three times. Bang, bang, bang.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive precision. Everyone's impressed.
Solid display. Shows discipline, accuracy.
But then Guan Xing steps up, and with this, I don't know, touch of youthful bravado maybe, he just scoffs. Hitting a red heart is nothing special.
Okay, bold words.
Right. Then he points up, there's a flock of geese flying overhead, and he takes aim and shoots down the third goose in the line with a single arrow.
The third one specifically.
The third one. The crowd apparently just erupts. They clearly see that as way more extraordinary. It's like this effortless, almost supernatural mastery compared to Zhang Bao's precision.
Wow. That contest, it does more than just show their skills, doesn't it? It really highlights these contrasting styles. You've got Zhang Bao with the precise traditional marksmanship.
Yeah.
And Guan Jing shows this almost instinctive, fluid, pinpoint accuracy, hitting a specific moving target in a flock.
Mm.
That's incredible. It definitely deepens their rivalry, showing these two different paths to martial excellence. You can see how each one would feel, you know, challenged by the other's unique strength.
And their competitive spirit, it just boils over. They nearly start fighting right there, grabbing their father's signature weapons.
Oh, wow.
Zhang Bao gets Zhang Fei's 18-foot tempered steel spear, and Guan Jing has Guan Yu's great saber. It's like you're seeing ghosts almost. Their father's reborn in their fury.
That could have been disastrous, seriously.
Mm.
Jeopardized the whole campaign before it even started. Imagine if one nephew killed the other right in front of the emperor.
Yeah, terrible. But Liu Bei steps in wisely. He reminds them forcefully about their fathers, about the oath of brotherhood, close as flesh and blood.
Invoking the peach garden oath, powerful stuff.
Exactly. He tells them they too are brothers now. They need to be united in heart and strength to avenge your fathers, not waste time arguing amongst themselves and lose sight of the great meaning. It's a really strong appeal, using that shared history, that deep cultural significance of the oath to just, you know, stop the fight.
And does it work?
It does. The message hits home. Guan Jing, because he's a year younger, he actually bows to Zhang Bao. And right there, they make this powerful vow. They break an arrow as an oath.
A strong symbol of commitment.
Yes, swearing eternal mutual assistance. So right there, a new generation of sworn brothers is forged. They unite their strength for the war ahead, and it kind of signifies the continuation of that Xu Han legacy, you know.
Oh.
Okay, so with the young generals reconciled, finally unified, this massive campaign against Wu begins. Wu Ban gets the vanguard position.
The general who brought the bad news initially.
Right. And Zhong Bao and Guan Sheng, they are tasked with personally protecting Liu Bei's imperial carriage, which is a really potent symbol, isn't it, of their new brotherhood and their responsibility.
It really is. And this army, it's presented as this truly impressive display of force, but it's more than just military might, isn't it? It feels like a profound political statement, too.
Oh, so?
Well, the text describes it as water and land advancing side by side, boats and cavalry moving together, mighty and vast. This isn't just a standard military maneuver. It's framed as a personal crusade.
Led by the emperor himself.
Led by an emperor consumed by grief, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a testament to his absolute resolve, and it's basically a declaration that he will spare absolutely no resource for vengeance. Just the logistics alone, moving an army that size would have been monumental.
Okay, let's switch perspective. Meanwhile, over in the kingdom of Wu, the consequences of their actions are starting to hit home. Fan Jiang and Zhang Da, the assassins.
Yeah, what happens to them?
They arrive and deliver Zhang Fei's head to Sun Quan. They detail the assassination, probably expecting, I don't know, refuge. A reward, maybe.
A dangerous gamble.
Seems like it. Because the news of Liu Bei's retaliation just sends shockwaves through the Wu court. Sun Quan, his officials, they are terrified. The text says they lost color in their faces. They looked at each other in dismay.
Bet they did.
Especially when they hear Liu Bei is personally leading, what was the number, over 70 myriad elite troops.
70 myriad, that's 700,000 troops.
700,000 marching against them.
Wow, that really highlights the immense pressure Wu is under now, politically and militarily. They clearly miscalculated badly.
Yeah.
They misjudged the depth of Liu Bei's grief and just how far he'd go, how much he'd risk for vengeance. It's a moment of just sheer panic, I think, realizing they've made a colossal strategic blunder.
So it's at this critical point, this moment of panic, that Zhu Jin steps forward.
Zhu Zhang's brother, who works for Wu.
Exactly. And he makes this incredibly courageous offer. He volunteers to go as an envoy to Liu Bei himself. He says he'll sacrifice his remaining life to try and make peace between the two nations.
That takes guts. Gonna face a grieving emperor leading a massive army.
Right. But here's the clever part. He adds another goal, to try and get Liu Bei to jointly punish Cao Pai.
Okay. That's the brilliant diplomatic pivot, isn't it?
Explain that.
Well, Zhu Gejin isn't just appealing for peace. He knows Liu Bei would probably just scorn that, right? He's appealing for a strategic alliance against their common, larger enemy, Cao Pai, in Wei.
Right, the bigger threat to both of them.
Exactly. So he's not just trying to save Wu from disaster. He's trying to completely reframe the conflict, turn this personal vendetta into a shared strategic goal. It shows a really sharp understanding of, you know, real politics, even in this desperate situation.
So Sun Quan, who's desperate,
he must be clutching at straws.
He agrees. Zhu Gejin is sent off on this incredibly high-stakes mission, basically hoping to stop this invasion with words, not weapons.